WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. U.S. Capitol Police are preparing to say goodbye to a second officer who died in the line of duty this year.
U.S. Capitol Acting Police Chief Yogananda Pittman later identified that officer as William Evans, an 18-year veteran of the force. He died after a 25-year-old man, identified as Noah Green, rammed a vehicle into a Capitol checkpoint, emerging with a knife. The suspect was killed. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died from injuries sustained during the January 6th attack at the Capitol. Another officer took his own life days later. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
A new state audit finds those COVID tests Maryland Governor Larry Hogan got at the beginning of the pandemic from South Korea were a violation of protocol.
The audit revealing Governor Hogan failed to follow state procurement regulations when 500,000 COVID tests were purchased from a South Korean company last year. The first batch that later had to be replaced at an additional $2.5 million had not been authorized by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. It also says the state did not ensure that some tests received last April were authorized by the FDA prior to them being shipped. Maria Leaf on WMA. And WMAL.com.
State officials say the unprecedented nature of the emergency required adapting existing practices to assure Maryland was able to meet the needs of the emergency. Virginia will be getting the 200,000 doses of Johnson & Johnson vaccine next week that it ordered. That even though 15 million doses of the vaccine made at a Baltimore plant were thrown out because they didn't pass quality control. The state's vaccine coordinator, Dr. Danny Avula.
I don't yet know what that will mean for future weeks, but we are eagerly anticipating updates from the federal government about Johnson & Johnson's production schedule. They are saying that this won't impact their targets for the month of April.
He says pharmacies in Virginia will be getting a big bump in Johnson & Johnson doses next week. The head of the Minneapolis Police Department's homicide division testifies that kneeling on the neck of someone who's handcuffed and lying on his stomach is, quote, totally unnecessary, unquote, deadly force. Lieutenant Richard Zimmerman testified yesterday in the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin, who's charged with killing George Floyd last year. Major League Baseball is moving its All-Star game out of Atlanta, Georgia, in protest of the state's new voting law, which they say makes it harder to vote because of the requirements for absentee ballots and voter ID. Georgia's Governor Brian Kemp on Fox's Tucker Carlson tonight.
Major League Baseball has folded up and caved to the cancel culture and a bunch of liberal lies, quite honestly. And what's even more sad is the President of the United States, Joe Biden, and people like Stacey Abrams labeling the Election Integrity Act, Jim Crow.
Inova doctors will no longer be the team physicians for the Washington football team. The health system says this will allow its doctors to focus on advancing patient-centered care in the D.C. region. And the Caps beat the Devils 2-1. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In College Park on the Beltway Interloop, there is a crash. Two right lanes are blocked approaching Baltimore Avenue, Route 1. On Route 1, Baltimore Avenue in Beltsville, southbound, there is construction. Two right lanes are closed between Montgomery Road and Edgewood Road. In the district on 295, on the northbound side and on the southbound side of the Anacostia Freeway, you're going to find construction. Only one lane is getting by between the 11th Street Bridge and Pennsylvania Avenue. And as for 395 and 695 in the district, right now there isn't any construction or any accidents to slow you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies on this Saturday. Also some warmer temperatures. Highs yesterday only reached the upper 40s. We should reach the upper 50s, a good 10 degrees warmer for this Saturday. Heading into tonight, low temperatures in the 30s in the suburbs, lower 40s around town. For your Easter Sunday, plenty of sunshine for the day. Temperatures very mild. A gorgeous day ahead of us. High temperatures in the upper 60s. Enjoy your Sunday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Thank you for joining us on the Saturday Morning Update, spending part of your Easter and Passover weekend with us. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He's the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, and a happy Easter and happy Passover to all of our listeners.
Well, it was a very tragic Good Friday at the U.S. Capitol, John, and we've learned more about that incident that resulted in the death of the suspect and the death of a U.S. Capitol police officer. Your perspective on the tragic events?
Well, certainly to those of us who've covered Capitol Hill for many years, it brought back memories of that hot July 24th of 1998. That's a long time ago. And that's when a suspect came into the U.S. Capitol, and two members of the Capitol Police tried to stop him, but he gunned them down, Officer Jacob Chestnut and Officer John Gibson, who would later lie in state in the Capitol. Earlier this year, during the equally tragic and unhappy events of January 6th, another officer was killed, and now there are four. In the history of the U.S. Capitol Police, four policemen have gone down defending the U.S. Capitol, the home of the legislative branch of government, and they will be honored by this country, and just as the latest officer will be honored. In the meantime, police have given a few details. Many people expected the knife-wielding suspect was wearing a MAGA hat, or would have a Trump T-shirt on. It turned out that's not the case. Noah Green was someone who pledged his allegiance to the Nation of Islam and its leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan. In fairness to Minister Farrakhan, he has yet to comment on this and give his views on what transpired on Friday. For now, America mourns the loss of Officer William Evans and prays for the recovery of the other officer wounded in the attack.
President Biden has introduced the quote-unquote infrastructure package, and some people have run the numbers to find out that it's not that much about infrastructure, but it's about a lot of other things. Big question mark on the price tag, and you've had some insight on the numbers.
Well, I got this from a memo that was prepared for the business community. It's a confidential memo, and it will soon be in the hands of Republican senators, no doubt enhancing and hardening the opposition to the infrastructure bill. Now, the president put a $2.25 trillion price tag on the measure, but he didn't include an additional trillion. Someone who actually read the bill and picked out key points shows that this does not include $300 billion for energy tax credits, $100 billion for infrastructure finance, another $230 billion for a domestic manufacturing investment tax credit, $300 billion for the highway bill, and $100 billion for a green bank. That's right, a brand new bank to invest in America's green economy that Biden and company envision. Again, it is said that the devil is in the details. Well, a number of Republicans who've read this memo are starting to say it's Lucifer, Satan, and Beelzebub all in the same bill, and we simply are not given the full total on it. This reporter expects that a lot of these things will be spelled out in the days ahead, and the president will be unable to count on a single one of the 50 Republicans for this bill. Someone's got to pay for it sometime, they'll argue.
I want to turn to an interview that you did with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. There's been a lot of speculation as to whether he'll run for Senate, whether he'll run for president. You talked to him this week. What did he say?
Well, Mike Pompeo made it very clear he was not going to talk about a presidential campaign, although he did admit people have encouraged him to do this. Rather, he said, I'm totally focused on 2022. He's going to be out campaigning for Republican candidates for the House and the Senate because he feels that President Biden is a captive of the progressive wing of his party, and only a Republican Congress can stop that agenda. Already, he's going to speak for Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska. He points out former Air Force General Bacon is an old airman, and I'm an old soldier, Pompeo being a graduate of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. In addition, he makes no bones about getting involved in primaries. He cited his hero, William F. Buckley's admonition that to have the most rightward candidate who's capable of being elected. Along those lines, he said, he's supporting his good friend Sarah Sanders, who's in a very competitive primary for governor of her home state of Arkansas, the former White House press secretary, to benefit from a campaign appearance by the former Secretary of State. And, of course, he made an appearance to a conservative group in, you guessed it, the state of Iowa. He's combative, he's conservative, and he's going to be giving full time to campaigning for other Republicans. Will he run the next time around? Well, if you ask him that question, he'll say, just wait.
We're going to continue our conversation with John Gizzi. There was a lot of debate as to whether Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, would unseat a seated Republican. Well, that's been resolved. We'll tell you what happened next. But first, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Montgomery County, there has been an accident reported on the outer loop of the Beltway in Silver Spring. You're going to find it at Coldsville Road, exit 30. No other delays on the Maryland side of the Beltway, inner loop or outer loop. In Beltsville, on Route 1, southbound, there is construction. Two right lanes are closed between Montgomery Road and Edgewood Road. And in D.C., on 295, the Anacostia Freeway. On the northbound side and on the southbound side, there is construction, and only one lane is getting by between the 11th Street Bridge and Pennsylvania Avenue. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies on this Saturday. Also, some warmer temperatures. Highs yesterday only reached the upper 40s. We should reach the upper 50s, a good 10 degrees warmer for this Saturday. Heading into tonight, low temperatures in the 30s in the suburbs, lower 40s around town. For your Easter Sunday, plenty of sunshine for the day. Temperatures very mild. A gorgeous day ahead of us. High temperatures in the upper 60s. Enjoy your Sunday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
And we're still at 28 degrees at 7:15 on the Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday morning update continues, and we continue our conversation with John Gizzi, the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. So we've talked about Iowa, too, over the past several months. One of the final races to be decided. And then once it was decided, there was the temptation of Nancy Pelosi to try and unseat the declared Republican victor. What's the latest on that one?
Well, dear hearts and gentle people, take my word on this one. Iowa 2 is over. On Monday, I participated in a conference call with Republican Marionette Miller Meeks, who condemned the efforts by Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats in the House to have yet another count of the race in which she beat Democrat Rita Hart by 6 votes out of 395,000 cast. That's one of the closest House races in American history, by the way. She'd started a legal defense fund, and even some Democrats were saying maybe their leadership was going too far trying to squeeze a Hart victory out of a race that's been counted and recounted and which authorities in the Hawkeye state had certified Republican Miller Meeks as the winner in. Rita Hart, the Democrat, finally agreed with this, and on Thursday she officially ended her challenge. Now there's talk that redistricting may move her into the neighboring district in Iowa, the first district, and she will be a candidate this time against freshman Republican Audrey Hinson. Some candidates never give up the ghost.
Did she go out gracefully or did she go down swinging?
She pretty much went down swinging with her message because she reiterated all her claims about faulty voting and mistakes, even though counters of both parties comprised the boards of certification in all the counties in the district.
The passing of G. Gordon Liddy this week, John, and for people that are not familiar with that name, what was the real significance of his role in American history?
Well, I can sum that up succinctly, Rick. If it wasn't for G. Gordon Liddy, we would have never heard the term Watergate in any other context except that of a hotel in Washington, D.C. He was the head of the plumbers unit designed in the Nixon White House to stop leaks to the press, and this became a part of the Nixon campaign. He masterminded the burglary at the Watergate Hotel, for which he and five others were arrested and charged. The rest, as they say, is history. It eventually brought down President Richard Nixon. Had he been doing something else at the time, Gordon Liddy would not be even remembered today, most likely, and there would have been no Watergate, and Richard Nixon would have served out a second term. Bob Woodward, who won a Pulitzer Prize and shared it with colleague Carl Bernstein, agrees with this assessment. James Rosen, the biographer of Nixon campaign manager John Mitchell, seconds it, and Pat Buchanan also agrees with it. Now, that said, I knew Gordon Liddy, and I found him a most interesting fellow. He was a veteran of the U.S. Army, an FBI agent, and an assistant prosecutor in Dutchess County, New York. He went to jail for 52 months rather than talking, and finally had his sentence commuted by President Carter. Rather than ask people to feel sorry for him or contribute money to pay his legal defenses, he went to work as a best-selling author, a radio talk show host, an actor, sometimes playing an adventurous character not unlike himself, and a very winning contestant on Password. And right up to his 90s, he did a regular workout routine, including push-ups. He was married to the same woman, Frances, until her death 11 years ago, and had five children who all turned out well. A very unique and interesting character, G. Gordon Liddy.
A very unique and interesting character, John Gizzi. Thank you for your perspectives, John.
Well, if I could be described that way, I guess it's time to call it a day.
All right. It's 7:20. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkinson off this weekend. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is coming up right after the 7:30 news, as is K.T. McFarland. It's 7:22. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And you may have heard that the Nets home opener was scrubbed due to a COVID-19 outbreak among Nets players. And the entire Nationals-Mets opening series now has been postponed. So if you had plans, the Mets series is off. Still a question mark about Monday's game. So we'll keep you posted, obviously, through the weekend on the latest on the Washington Nationals. But that's tough if you had planned, finally, to watch some baseball. No go. So, interesting note. We've heard so much about Hunter Biden's laptop that, obviously, many media outlets didn't want you to hear about, and social media didn't want you to hear about. Hunter Biden has a memoir out. He's on his book tour. So he ended up on CBS Sunday Morning. Now, it's interesting. They put him on the softball show instead of maybe 60 Minutes where he might get some hardballs. So anyway, he's doing the kind of, you know, CBS News Light on Sunday Morning. And there have been a lot of talk about the laptop. And they did ask him about that for the CBS Sunday Morning program. If you want to spend part of your Easter with Hunter Biden, here's your chance, and here's part of what he's going to say.
Was that your laptop?
For real? I don't know.
I know, but you know that this is...
I really don't know what the answer is.
You don't know yes or no if the laptop was yours.
I don't have any idea. I have no idea.
So could have been yours.
Of course, certainly. There could be a laptop out there that was stolen from me. There could be that I was hacked. It could be that there was the... that it was Russian intelligence. It could be that it was stolen from me.
And it could have been that I did drop it off myself, but I just don't remember because something was going on in my life at that point. But he didn't go that far with it. So, you know, he's kind of throwing up the old, it can be one of a number of things, but probably not the most obvious thing. Remember, Joe Biden, a flashback to October 2020, and this is Joe Biden during a Q&A about Hunter's laptop on 60 Minutes, and this is one of the other efforts on the Russian disinformation campaign.
Do you believe the recent leak of material allegedly from Hunter's computer is part of a Russian disinformation campaign?
From what I've read and know, the intelligence community warned the president that Giuliani was being fed disinformation from the Russians. And we also know that Putin is trying very hard to spread disinformation about Joe Biden. And so when you put the combination of Russia, Giuliani, the president together, it's just what it is. It's a smear campaign because he has nothing he wants to talk about in his... What is he running on?
Or it could have just been Hunter dropping the laptop off and not remembering it. So the new infrastructure, quote-unquote, bill is being proposed by President Biden. It's a $2.3 trillion spending bill. Lots of things in it. And one thing that you may find interesting is the real effort to promote electric vehicles. They're going to spend $174 billion to build 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations, electrify 20% of school buses, and electrify the federal fleet, including the U.S. Postal Service. Now, one slight problem with that. At this point in technology, you know, the lithium-ion batteries that we use to power the electric vehicles, at this point, the majority are produced in China, okay? So what does that mean in terms of our reliance on China for energy? 60% of the world's manufacture of lithium-ion batteries is in China. 80% of the raw materials that are used to manufacture the lithium-ion batteries found in China. President Trump, at the time, was a strong proponent of energy independence. So when we electrify all of our moves, what does that mean for our reliance upon China? And taxes. Now, I had a conversation yesterday with a college professor in the area, professor of finance. He preferred not to go on the air. He preferred just to give me background information. Probably did not want to be in a position where he would get canceled by his university for saying something negative about the proposed tax increases from the president. But he did tell me that raising the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28%, which is one of the proposals to fund the large infrastructure program, that ultimately will likely be passed on to the consumer. So expect prices for things to increase when the corporate tax rate goes from 21 to 28%. Now, they're also talking about imposing a 21% global minimum tax so that companies cannot avoid taxes by shifting income to low-tax countries, also making it harder for businesses to merge with foreign companies to avoid U.S. taxes, and that's a process known as inversion. But these efforts in raising all of the corporate taxes and closing corporate loopholes may end up in corporations starting to outsource once again and create manufacturing for their companies in other countries. So things to be aware of that they're not mentioning. Now, there's been talk of a possible increase in the capital gains tax, and that's not initially, at least at the moment, in the proposal for the infrastructure bill, but it is something that President Biden has talked about. And keep that in mind when he says, well, nobody under $400,000 will be paying more to fund the infrastructure program. Well, that's not true, because the corporate taxes will be passed along to you in terms of the prices of products. And if there is a capital gains tax increase, that will impact virtually anybody that ever sells a stock. So keep these things in mind when they try and put up the smokescreen about how you're not going to be impacted. Think twice about that line. It's 729. We've got the news coming up next at 730 with Heather Curtis. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. We're learning more about the man who rammed his car into two Capitol Police officers at a barricade yesterday, killing William Evans. 25-year-old Noah Green was shot and killed after getting out of his car and lunging at the officers with a knife. He wrote on social media that he is a follower of the Nation of Islam.
He went on to write that his faith is, quote, centered on the belief of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as Jesus the Messiah, the final divine reminder in our midst. Green said he's never met Farrakhan, but believes he's the man who can carry him through his dark hour. Quoting again here, the minister is here to save me and the rest of humanity, even if it means facing death.
Fox's Trace Gallagher. Northern Virginia will not have any problems moving into phase two of vaccine eligibility by April 18th, along with the rest of the state, according to vaccine coordinator Dr. Danny Avula.
We've seen a 45% increase in the number of doses that have gone there from the week of March 14th to the week of March 28th, and then there'll be another big jump this week. I think we are both maxing out the health department capacity and then using the other channels that exist up there.
He says the InnovaRun MassVac site at Victory Center will get a greater allocation of doses next week. WMAL Sports, Innova doctors will no longer be the team physicians for the Washington football team. The health system says this will allow its doctors to focus on advancing patient care in the D.C. region. And the Caps beat the Devils 2-1. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway in McLean, there is a crash. Three lanes are blocked. This is right at George Washington Parkway, exit 43. In Silver Spring, on the outer loop of the Beltway, there's a crash with the right shoulder block at Colesville Road, exit 30. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, no reports of any delays eastbound or westbound between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge. And in D.C. on 295, the Anacostia Freeway, northbound and southbound, only one lane is getting by for construction between the 11th Street Bridge and Pennsylvania Avenue. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
High pressure will dominate the region to start the day. Plenty of sunshine, temperatures reaching the upper 50s. Should be a nice start to the day. Could have some added afternoon and evening clouds as a weak system passes by to the north, but dry conditions expected. Lows tonight, not quite as cold, in the 30s in the outlying suburbs, lower 40s around town, but generally above freezing. For Easter Sunday, beautiful conditions in store, temperatures in the upper 60s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:36 Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart and the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick, always great to join you. Thanks for having me.
Well, what should have been a happy Easter weekend had a very, very tragic start yesterday at the U.S. Capitol, and the tragic death of Officer William Billy Evans, 18-year veteran of the U.S. Capitol Police Force. And the man who police say rammed the car into the security barrier and hit two officers, and we are very fortunate to say this morning that the other officer is in stable condition, with non-life-threatening injuries. But the reports are that the man emerged from the vehicle with a knife, and from USA Today, they say in the story that he had shown growing support on social media for Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam group. And what more do you know about the suspect, Tony, and what influence some of these things may have had on his life and his actions?
Well, that's the issue. What influenced him? Was this simply essentially a death by cop, or someone who has mental issues, drives up and gets shot, or is there something greater regarding symbology? And I think we all debate constantly what is an act of terror or not, and I think that's where we're going with this. And simply put, this young man was disturbed before his social media was taken down, Facebook was taken down. Andy Ngo was able to get some screenshots of it, and it shows that he was deeply supportive of the Nation of Islam, of Louis Farrakhan. And if you're going to take that as kind of the starting point and examine his actions of yesterday, it's very clear that he was radicalized. And there's some good articles out there that kind of go through and examine his own worldview of things based on what he said. And that's all we have at this point. There'll be a deeper investigation. But I think it's abundantly clear that this young man chose Good Friday to attack a symbolic target, that being the Capitol. And I don't know if you've looked at the specific location. The location of the attack came right next to between the Senate office buildings and the entranceway into the Senate side of the Capitol. So that, I believe, was selected with knowledge of forethought of where he was going. And so it was, simply put, this man was influenced. And I think it was an act of terror. I think it's a lone wolf. That term is overused, but clearly I think appropriate for the circumstance. And it's very sad. And I'm going to be curious to see if FBI had this guy on their radar at all, which they say they don't. But, first reports are always dubious.
The D.C. Police Chief Robert J. Conte III said that the attack did not appear to be terrorism related. He made that comment around 2:45 yesterday afternoon. So it was very early.
Yeah, 2:45.
That was very early into the investigation. The question I have for you is, what is the threshold for whether this is ultimately labeled an attack or whether it is labeled terrorism? How do the authorities sort of define the difference there?
Well, it's going to be political. We knew that there was a shooting in Texas a few years ago where an Army psychologist who was essentially an Anwar al-Awlaki follower who had actually been in touch with him, was actually espousing radical Islam. But according to the Army back then, the Obama administration, it was workplace violence. So it's going to be defined by those who have political motivation to shape it a certain way to fit their narrative. And I think we've seen a lot of that this week. First off, this is going to fade away because this doesn't meet the mainstream media's narrative of anything, because this was a man who was a minority following an extremist group that's not white supremacist. So they're going to try to memory hold it. So we're going to see both their denial that this was an act of terror, which I still believe it was. If you look at what that definition is, just using objective facts, and if you examine his motivation. So it's going to be a battle, but I think we all see what happened, and I think we'll have to judge for ourselves.
I want to turn to China, and I had an email from a listener that wanted me to ask you about this. And first, it was related to the meetings in Alaska that the U.S. delegation had with the Chinese delegation and the really aggressive tone that the Chinese took against the U.S. delegation. And you pointed out a story about the Chinese military preparing in the Taiwan Straits. And I guess the question here is, are they testing the Biden administration? And what do you see as the response from the Biden administration?
Well, I don't see a response. That's the whole issue. There's been nothing. Basically, to the first point of the Alaska summit, the Chinese were bellicose in their language and aggressive in their behavior. That's not like random. And they didn't just show up and decide, gee, I'm going to have a bad day and express it in front of the Americans. This was designed to send a message. And Blinken did nothing to respond to that. And now we have military buildups near Taiwan, which are obviously signaling something relating to what they want. The Chinese have also gone about trying to dismantle the Hong Kong democracy movement. These are all bad signs not being responded to. So adversaries like China have historically moved forward and become more and more aggressive. And I do, you know, the audience needs to go back and actually examine the history of the Third Reich of Nazi Germany from about 1933 to 1940 to see the pattern of expansion of their rhetoric and how that resulted in military action. So, and I do believe there's a lot of parallels there. So I'm not saying that to get attention. I'm saying that you need to examine the parallels. And so I think Taiwan's going to be a significant potential event that if the Biden administration doesn't get ahead of that to do something to define our interests of that being willing to counter China, they're going to do something.
And we got a minute or so to talk about the border situation, the southern border, of course, and 171,000 apprehended at the border in the month of March. That's apprehensions. And, you know, I asked the question, what about those who were not apprehended?
So depending on who you talk to, one of the professionals I spoke to about this says that's only about one third of what probably came through the border. There's no way of telling because, you know, it's hard to measure illegal activity of that scope. But if you're seeing that number, there's probably, you know, it's like the old iceberg thing. If you see that, there's probably a lot more going on below the water, and that's what we're seeing here. So just imagine that number expanded by three, Rick, and that's what's going on. And I think that's where everybody recognizes that the Biden administration, by dismantling the Trump capacity south of the border to work with nations to create zones and entry points, essentially asylum points in their countries, he's created this crisis, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, children are being literally thrown over the fence. They're being drowned in the river. This is a true humanitarian crisis that they chose to create, and it's not going to get any better. I do see the next 6 months being critical. And I'm going to say this on the record. I think you could see more, even a greater record as the weather gets warmer, probably next month into June. So it's going to be bad, and they don't seem to understand how to do anything to stop it at this point.
And you have the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. It's a holiday weekend. People maybe have some spring break time next week. And what do you have latest in the podcast department?
So this week we're actually doing something on what we've been talking about, on this whole idea of what the war on objective truth that's being conducted by the media. We go through and have a panelist of a lot of our senior fellows and talk about what's going on and the Great Reset, what's really going on with the Great Reset. So I hope people will tune into our podcast on londoncenter.org.
Tony, thank you very much. You have a very nice Easter holiday, and we'll catch up next week.
Thanks. You too, Rick.
Our pleasure. 7:46, the Saturday morning update on WMAO. We'll talk with KT McFarland next, and she's got some interesting perspectives on the Biden infrastructure plan and what that means for the future. Stay with us on WMAO. Right now, Al BD is in the WMAO Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway in McLean, there is an accident. Left lane is blocked at the George Washington Parkway, exit 43. In Merrifield, on the outer loop of the Beltway at 66, exit 49, the right lane is blocked on that off-ramp from the outer loop to westbound 66. Only the left lane is getting by. In D.C., on 295, the Anacostia Freeway, both northbound and southbound, there is construction. Only one lane is getting by between the 11th Street Bridge and Pennsylvania Avenue. And on Route 1 in Beltsville, southbound, there is construction. Two right lanes are closed between Montgomery Road and Edgewood Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies on this Saturday. Also some warmer temperatures. Highs yesterday only reached the upper 40s. We should reach the upper 50s, a good 10 degrees warmer for this Saturday. Heading into tonight, low temperatures in the 30s in the suburbs, lower 40s around town. For your Easter Sunday, plenty of sunshine for the day. Temperatures very mild. A gorgeous day ahead of us. High temperatures in the upper 60s. Enjoy your Sunday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
30 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47 on WMAL. 7:49, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She was the first Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration. She has authored Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, happy Easter, and thank you for being with us this morning.
It's an honor, and it's a pleasure.
You know, Joe Biden has introduced what is labeled the infrastructure program, his plan for America, America's future, $2.3 trillion in spending over the next 8 years, fueled by higher corporate taxes. And we always like to get your perspective because you can kind of step back and give us the overview, the big picture, and how this will impact us moving forward.
You know, I wrote about this in the first part of my book about why Trump's policies, which were like Reagan's economic policies, why they worked and why the Democrats' tax and spend never works. And here's the thing. If his infrastructure bill were really about building new highways and roads and bridges and fast trains, well, you know, that'd be great. But that's not what this bill is about. It's about the Green New Deal and all the political pork for members' districts. I mean, as I wrote about in my book, here's the phrase I use. It's about borrowing money we don't have from countries who are not our friends in order to pay for projects we don't need to keep politicians who don't deserve it in office.
And you wrote that in the book, right? So you predicted this.
Yeah, but it was about, of course, it's the same cycle we go through every 40 years. But the Democrats, they spend a lot of money. They spend a lot of other people's money. They can't help themselves but massively regulate everything, right, because they're so much smarter than anybody else. And then what happens is the economy starts, it's like sand in the gears. It goes slower and slower and slower. And then eventually Republicans come in, like Reagan did, like Trump did, and say, wait a minute, let's have regulatory reform. We now have so many different rules that are even contradictory that business doesn't know how to respond. So let's clean that up. And that's an immediate boost to the economy. And then they say, secondly, let's cut taxes. Now, Democrats, this is counterintuitive, but it's a very fundamental thing that most people with no common sense, like most people in Washington, they don't understand this. If you cut taxes, you get higher revenues. Now, you'd think just the opposite. If we're cutting taxes, we're going to get less revenues. Well, you do get less revenues for the first year. But what happens is in the next year and the year after that, revenues increase because the economy grows. John Kennedy did this in the 1960s. He cut taxes, and it was a huge economic boom about 2 years later. Reagan cut taxes, and it was a massive economic boom that lasted for 20 years, 30 years, when Reagan cut taxes. And that it took about 18 months for his tax decrease to kick in with higher economic growth. With Trump, because he did economic regulatory reform, and he did tax cuts, and he did cheap energy with fracking, the effect was within 18 months. It was really within 12 months. So you have a lousy year while everything's getting in place, but then everything takes off. Now, couple this with the post-pandemic sort of freeing up of the America, all this pent-up demand where we've had nothing to spend our money on for 12 months because we've all been locked down. Now, there's going to be a big boom as we unlock. But Biden's going to cripple it because they're having the regulatory reform. They're going to ban fracking. And then they're going to have these massive tax increases. It'll look good. It'll look really good for about a year, like a sugar high. But then the economy is just going to come crashing down about a year, 18 months, or just in time for the 2022 election.
And the relationship of the tax plan and the corporations and what it means in the higher taxes for the corporations.
Okay, so look at it this way. Has anybody been paying attention of the mass exodus of people out of New York to Florida or out of California to Idaho? Why are people leaving? Well, it's because of the taxes in large part. Bad governance for sure, but it's the taxes. The taxes become crippling. And with the Biden tax increases, which were supposed to only be rich people, right? Only people who made over $400,000 a year. Oops, slight correction. Now it's only families that make more than $400,000 a year. So if you make $200,000 plus $200,000, oops, you're all of a sudden really rich, and then you're going to pay for this. But the taxes never get paid by the really rich. They figure out a way to avoid them. It's the middle class because that's where the money is. And so the taxes are going to hit the middle class. And this is going to happen at the same time that they're taxing corporations. Now, corporations can move just like people are moving out of New York into Florida where there's no income tax. In Florida,
There's massive income tax in New York, about to go even higher. So people move. Corporations move their headquarters. That's what has happened in the last 25 years before Trump. Corporations would move out of New York or New Jersey, and they'd move to Dublin. They were making the same amount of money, but they weren't being taxed the same way. And now Biden's going to do it back all over again. He's going to put all those big taxes on corporations, thinking somehow it doesn't affect us. Well, this is how it affects the average guy, because your 401k, the accounts that you hold, the tax, the stocks and bonds you hold, those aren't going to be worth anything anymore, because they're going to go down by about a quarter once the stock market catches up to this. And the second thing is that corporations, they say, well, why should I relocate? I'll just relocate abroad where there are really low taxes. America is about to have the highest corporate tax rate in the world, plus some. Corporations are just going to move. And so Biden's going to say, well, oh, we're going to catch you anyway. We're not going to let you move. Or when you move, we're going to still tax you. Well, that's an even greater incentive for companies to say, wait, I'm quitting America altogether. I'm going to break my company in two. And it's a little bit in the weeds, Rick, but what's going to happen is corporations are going to move the same way people move, the same way the tech community that was in Silicon Alley, it was called, or in downtown Manhattan, is that they're now moving. They're now moving to Florida. They're moving to Miami because of the taxes. People can move nowadays. Corporations can move. And so any politician who thinks, well, I'm going to tax those guys and I'm going to get the money I want to dole it out to the people I want to dole it out to, you're only having a short-term gain. It's a great tragedy what these people are doing. If the Green New Deal was all about building infrastructure, or if the tax thing, I would probably be in favor of it. But it's none of those things. It's all about rewarding their pals and their friends to get votes to stay in office. Horrible what they're going to do to the country.
We've got about 2 minutes left. As a former deputy national security advisor, what do you see as the vulnerabilities with China here? I mean, the Trump administration got us energy independence, but the lithium ion batteries are made in China. What's the big picture for how we are impacted with China here?
Part of it is where the borrowing is coming from. Well, the five, six, whatever, how many trillion Biden plans to borrow on the national credit card. Who pays for that? You know, who's lending us the money? Well, China's our largest foreign creditor. So we are now going to have the mortgage on our house being held by our greatest competitor and enemy. It makes me a little nervous. The second thing, though, is that with all the emissions, the Paris Climate Accords and all the emissions standards, et cetera, a man who is in the energy business in the United States and internationally, he explained to me that what happens in China is they build these plants, these energy generating plants using wind, solar, natural gas, however they build them. And they build them with these great emissions control mechanisms in them. And then they get certified. And then once the certifiers leave, once the guys from the Paris Accords, then the Chinese turn those things off because they're far too expensive and costly. So the Chinese aren't abiding by anything. They're cheating. We're abiding by everything. We're tying our hands behind our backs. We're letting the Chinese sort of zoom ahead economically, and they're going to own the mortgage on the house.
KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. It's so interesting how you laid all this out in the book, and now we see it in reality. KT, thank you so much, and have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, and a pleasure and an honor again.
Thank you so much, and we are all honored to have you with us every weekend here, KT, and we just get so much response from our listeners, and it is always an honor to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. We've got the news next at 8 o'clock, and then it's Garden Sense right here on WMAL. And you have a very happy Easter and the conclusion of Passover this weekend. So do enjoy your holiday.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.